Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, December 29th, 2016, the last show of 2016. Wow. And I'm very glad to see this year end. I mean, we should all use to our advantage our time, etc. But when great forces are working against you, it's like you're walking backwards in molasses. That's the best example I can show. But tonight's main science topic, technocracy. Now, this is a topic that many listeners have asked me to cover. And so, what is technocracy? Well, first of all, there's a guy who's done a tremendous amount of research and organization on this topic. His name is Patrick Wood. I would expect you to go and search him out on the internet. Just look up technocracy, just like it sounds, and Patrick Wood. But he's what I would consider the central figure, and he understands that what we're dealing with today, say with Obamacare or the New World Order or carbon tax or the a smart grid, other aspects of science controlling your life. And this is all to help you out, to make you, to allow you to live in this modern, difficult world where you have energy forced down your throat, where energy is the central issue in your life. And he talks about in the 1930s, when the concept of technocracy was advanced and put into motion, within the secret societies, within the background, within the government, that the idea of, say, peak oil was important. So, like I say, these are ideas that are coming out of the work of Patrick Wood. Now, let me just say something. A lot of the work that I've done over the years has illustrated the ineptitude of government science. The EPA, I've been on interviews with Dr. David Lewis, who is very high-ranking scientist in the EPA, and basically had a all-out battle with them internally at first, and then he was let go. And then he came back and he won court cases against the EPA, showing that they were faking data, had an agenda which they were pursuing, and allowing pollution to occur with their allowed pollution programs, and that this was not in the best interest of the public. Also, the EPA has been instrumental in the global climate change movement, which, thank goodness, is being dumped by Trump. And when you come to clearing out a lot of the NASA funding over the past decades has been towards this. It actually originated with Carl Sagan with the so-called greenhouse effect, which didn't work on Venus. Venus has a massive CO2 atmosphere, and the greenhouse effect doesn't work there. So how does it work on Earth, which has a minuscule CO2 atmosphere? Let me just make a quick comment about those people out there that still think that you driving your SUV up and down the road is causing global warming, and in a 50-year period, the Earth's temperature will rise by a degree or two. As you drive your car, as you look at the nuclear power plant or the coal power plant or the propane or natural gas-funded, fueled power plant running, and before it's all done, about 90% of that energy that same day is going off into the atmosphere, millions of times more than any greenhouse effect. And remember, they don't say greenhouse anymore. They talk about carbon and carbon tax and carbon control and carbon reduction and things like this, but they never say greenhouse effect because they know scientifically it died on the vine decades ago. It was 1991. I was teaching in a college setting in a state university system, and I was teaching astronomy and physics. But I did a presentation at the time to the college administration because they were all up in arms and they were going to get everybody hyped up about global warming, which was the topic at the time, and the greenhouse effect. And I showed them how this was just a political football and that science all steps in line because, hey, it's a paycheck. It's a guaranteed paycheck. And there's nothing that scientists love more than a guaranteed paycheck. Because if you got a PhD in atmospheric science or whatever it is, where else are you going to get a job? There's no place on the planet where you're going to get a job. So Trump is putting these people out to pasture, which is a good thing. I mean, I'm sorry for these people. They picked the wrong apple cart to go on. But back to technocracy, global climate change, Obamacare, all of these major government programs are a part of control. And I want to quote once again from Patrick Wood in that what he says is this is not socialism, it's not fascism, it's not communism, it's something far more sinister, and I couldn't agree more. I've been living my entire scientific career being hedged out by government scientists who run a monopoly because they get the money. They control the news media, the glossy magazines like Discover, etc. They have a whole fleet of resource people that are out there pounding the pavement, trolls we call them on the internet, where they, if a topic arises, they jump on it immediately. If my name pops up any place on YouTube or Facebook or Google or any place, they are there immediately to first slam me and then have it removed. Many people have tried this on YouTube videos, on other social media where things are posted, or in articles. Say an article occurs in some magazine, say Wired magazine. It's a techie, kind of a Trekkie, let's put it that way, not techie. I would call it Trekkie. Geek magazine for engineers, etc. Very, very highly controlled by the CIA with their themes, etc. If my name appears on there, immediately someone is in line to slam me with the standard baloney about James McCanney. And so, anyway, all I'm saying is that the control of science is super important to not let anything through the cracks, because I've been an independent scientist, but the entire issue of, like, say, Al Gore going around and getting Madonna to sing or to Leonardo DiCaprio, the big stars, it's always very influential. Gee, if Leonardo DiCaprio says it, gee, it must be true. Even though he's got no more scientific background than the man in the moon. But anyway, or Bill Gates or all of these other people who are pushing those agendas because, hey, it's good for business. Bill Gates has a program where he wants to put $20 billion into the advancement of alternative energies that would save the planet. Yet, they don't, I talked about this before, they don't take any information or technical contributions. They say if you send them something, they immediately own it and they don't have to even respond to you. In other words, it's out there to gobble up any technologies that are promising and bury them so they never see the light of day. And they have $20 billion bet on this program. It's like a thing called Star Watch. Back in the 80s, 90s, this was a big deal. Internationally, they had offices all over. And I always used to wonder, how could they get the money to fund this staff worldwide in every country, offices in all the major cities of the world, for this little organization, supposedly privately funded, that kept information or gathered information on UFOs and UFO contacts. Well, it turns out that all these people worked for the CIA. And what they were doing is that if, you know, Juan or Pierre in France or Juan in Brazil or whoever saw something with UFOs or something like that, of course they would go and that information would immediately get sucked into the Star Watch program, and then they would go out and investigate and bury it and, of course, gather all the good information, but it would never get to you, the public. Only the goofy stuff ever saw the light of day, and that was because they needed a good disinformation program. So anyway, when the CIA came in and took over NASA in 1991, this is another step towards technocracy, where NASA, a lot of the funding that went into NASA was for global climate change. And, you know, wait a minute, NASA's supposed to be about outer space, going out there and being in outer space. What's NASA spending large volumes of money studying Earth's atmosphere? Well, you could justify it, but it was a disproportionate amount of money. And, of course, all those scientists had to stand in line. And I remember a time when some professors, some university professors, complained because their papers were being modified before they were sent out. And I thought, well, buddy, you work for this agency. You know, they're about them and policy and direction that comes from far above them. So these scientists are just paid, paid pawns in this system. Their job is to move in a certain direction and use their supposed credentials to move science or the belief about science into certain directions that are politically correct. And look, Obama fired a guy recently that in the higher rankings of, I believe it was the EPA, that disagreed and made some statements relative or against global climate change. This guy was fired. He was sidelined, fired, and eliminated. So what does that send to a message to everybody else? The message it sends is that if you want your wife to be happy and be in her nice house, if you want your kids to go to college, if you want to retire with a pension and you don't want to work at McDonald's the rest of your life flipping hamburgers, then you better toe the line. That's what it tells you. Pretty clear message. So technocracy is the science control of the public. Now, throughout this lecture tonight, I'll be covering a lot of topics. And they'll be seemingly unrelated, but I'm going to bring it back into the concept of technocracy. Recently, it's been announced that the past presidents that have not RSVP'd to attend the inauguration of Trump on January 20th, only Jimmy Carter has responded that he's going to be there. So you got the two Bushes, you got Bill Clinton, and that's why I posted that picture on my webpage going back literally decades, that Bill Clinton as a young guy is sitting there and he's got his wedding ring on, which means Hillary had his clutches on him way back then, good time and Billy. And then there's George Bush Sr., and George Bush Sr. is shaking hands with, Governor Wallace from Alabama. But anyway, it just shows how far back these people go. But in 1991, George Bush was president, and he was responsible for the technocracy, in other words, putting the scientific lid on NASA. And one of the first appointments also of Bill Clinton's appointment of staff was to put Dan Golden, who was a buddy of George Bush Sr., in the CIA, to come in and put the lid on NASA. And when this happened, I was friends with a lot of people in NASA, at Goddard, at JPL, etc. And I saw the changes. And I used to be able to talk to the secretaries. I'd pick up the phone. Hey, Mr. McCanny, how you doing? What do we need today? Transfer me over to so-and-so, please. And so they'd always have something nice to say. Man, they changed. A lot of them were basically put on hold and control. They were all under gag orders. And this is because they needed to control science. And the kickoff for this was the discovery of the nucleus of the comet Hale-Bopp. This was what Harrington discovered. This was the Planet X object in Harrington's search. Now, I talk about that in my July 23rd, 2015 release, the DVD. It's a downloadable DVD on my sales page. But it's about the Harrington expedition, Planet X, and the 20th anniversary of Hale-Bopp, which occurred on July 23rd, 2015. But back in 91, George Bush Sr. and everybody in the scientific community in the CIA level, not at NASA, not at the science level of NASA, which I call Tier 2, but at the higher-ups, they knew about Planet X on a near-collision course with Earth. And so that's when the lid was put on NASA, and I didn't know till the time. It finally took me 20 years to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. But there again, control of the public through disinformation programs about Hale-Bopp, about Planet X. And by the way, there were a lot of people in the military that knew about Hale-Bopp and what it really was, that it was on a collision course with Earth. And it wasn't until a number of years later, remember it was discovered in around 1995 by Hale and Bopp, but it was known about within inner circles since 1991. Harrington mysteriously dies. His assistant, Tom Van Flandern, comes out with a statement, says there's no such thing as Planet X, when Van Flandern was the guy who prompted Harrington to even start the study, convinced that there was a Planet X object there because of the perturbations, that is the change in orbits of the planets Uranus and Neptune. Okay, so anyway, what I'm pointing out is that you go way back in history, 25, 35, 50, 70 years, 80 years, and technocracy using science and engineering as control mechanism for the public was already in place and moving forward. So ultimately, the thing that controls the world today has been energy, and through the control and the management of oil distribution using the petrol dollar, they have managed to start wars, create wars, control oil around the world. But now there's a little problem. Oil has become so available, and this whole concept of peak oil was a farce. Back in the, let me see, when was this? Well, let's just go back to the mid-90s. The oil companies at that point were laying off geologists like crazy. And the reason was, this was from inside information that I had from a guy, Bill, my good friend, who later died of cancer. But Bill told me, and he was a guy who worked in the computer rooms, in the inside inner workings of the CIA, the oil companies, etc. He said that they had discovered so many oil deposits on Earth that they could not even imagine using it all. There was no need to discover anymore. So they let all these geologists go at the same time that they were propounding peak oil. That oil will run out, we're going to hit a maximum, that possibly we've already hit a maximum, and then we're going to be tapering off, and there's going to be a crisis in the price of oil because of commodities, in other words, quantity, the lack of quantity, the price of oil would skyrocket. And so anyway, that was the big fear back in the 90s and the 2000s, this concept of peak oil, and it got on radio shows. And then they came out with the idea of abiotic oil, where supposedly oceans of oil formed down deep in Earth's crust all by itself. I mean, nobody has ever shown any of this, how this magically happens, because they understood, the public knew. In fact, the opening part of my book, The Diamond Principle, talks about the the fact that we have oil wells that are 18 miles deep, and they have vast quantities of ocean. That's what the BP oil spill was all about, is the tremendous pressure on the oil down there. It makes it come up, and they can't cap it. This has so much pressure, they cannot put a cap on this in vast amounts. I mean, you just put a tube down there. In fact, one of my projects here is to put a ban on any drilling in the Earth's surface of more than 3 kilometers. We don't need it for oil. We have plenty of surface oil, and we don't need to drill that deep. But the problem is, if you break a fissure and you allow water to get down into the magma, which is going to happen, then all of a sudden you could start creating super volcanoes, and you wouldn't be able to stop them. So drilling down into the Earth's surface is like sticking a pin in a balloon. Not a good idea at all. And so anyway, that's something I hope to accomplish as one of my, as you know, along with draining the Yellowstone Lake, something that I've recognized just in that viewpoint. The lake at Yellowstone, there have been 3 of the dozens and dozens of major eruptions at Yellowstone. The caldera has moved from where the state of Idaho is now over into where it is in Wyoming. But the 3 major eruptions that were pyroclastic, in other words, exploded and destroyed vast amounts of land going all the way into Nebraska, those 3 major explosions were at a time when Yellowstone had a lake. Now we have Yellowstone Lake, which is probably the biggest lake that has ever existed on that caldera in history, going back into geological history. So we're setting up for a major, major eruption. So we got to get the water out of that lake so that if Yellowstone breaches the volcano there, and remember, that caldera is 50 miles across, actually larger. And if that breaches and that water falls down and hits the magma, it's the end of the world as we know it. It's going to be nuclear winter, and literally the vast majority of the world population would die overnight. So it's very essential to drain the lake at Yellowstone. But there again, you, with government geologists in place, you can't get a word in edgewise because these people don't understand. They think that the water that occurs, the steam pressure, etc., that occurs is due to deep abiotic water that is down in the Earth's crust, locked up in minerals. No, not at all. The empirical evidence is clear. The major eruptions of Yellowstone volcano, going back through history, have all occurred when there was water in the caldera. Okay, so continuing on here, the idea that Jimmy Carter is the only president that's going to attend the inauguration is really kind of scary, because remember that the Bushes flipped from the Republican Party to support Hillary Clinton, donated a lot of money to Hillary Clinton. That just shows their allegiance to the Republican Party. No, their allegiance is to the New World Order, to the CIA, and to everything dark that has been going on in Washington, D.C. So they're not going to attend the inauguration, because Hillary made a statement one time, and I'm not trying to dig up the election, because this is all related to the control of technocracy, because she was going to continue with Obamacare, which is one of the biggest economic disasters ever hit to the United States. People have lost jobs, they can't get jobs, the employers will not hire them simply because of Obamacare. Part-time university and college-level teachers have to work at 3 different schools part-time just to make ends meet. Nobody will let them become full-time teachers because of Obamacare. It's absolutely insane. So, at any rate, this is because the Trump administration is going to take this old technocracy control mechanism and send it down the river. So everything these people have been working for, the Bushes, the Clintons, the Obamas, the etc., everything they've been working for literally 30 years is all of a sudden going asunder in record time. Everything they're doing, the United Nations Accords, the Agenda 21, the global climate tax, all of Al Gore's world traveling to try and bring this message to the world, like we got to save the world, like he's saving the world. All of that is going down the tube. And I talked last week, remember, about the fact that the opening up the local supplies of energy is very important. Because first you dump foreign dependence on oil, so that all of that money is going into foreign countries, making Saudi Arabia rich, allowing them to come back and do terrorism, plan terrorism, and fund terrorism on our own soil. But cutting off the money supply to those places that have far too much money, far too much time on their hands, and now they're into the business of creating problems for the United States. And so becoming energy independent is a major issue. Then it will be a matter of transition into another phase of energy independence where we move to alternative energy for the majority of our energy use. And that will not be solar panels. It will not be three-blade wind generators. It's going to be the Mekani wing generator, which is a serious, very high power generation device that can replace nuclear and coal power plants, which is the majority of our energy, and move to an electric economy for trains, motorcycles, automobile transportation, install the infrastructure so that you can drive in and instead of filling up with gasoline, you fill up with electricity that is free from the wind. And so what happens? That energy goes through your car, goes into the motion, and goes back into the atmosphere. It's a very clean process. And remember that, like I said before, high energy content fuels, probably 90% of that, by the time you light your light bulb or whatever, about 90% of that energy goes up in heat. That's heat in the transmission wires. Everything has resistance. Everything creates heat. The generator itself is about 75% inefficient. Right at the nuclear generator or coal plant, 75% of that heat is belching right into the atmosphere right now. So if you want to cure global warming, shut down the nuclear power plants, etc. And I've been very impressed with what Trump is doing. He's already calling for a solution to nuclear storage. We cannot continue to store nuclear waste around nuclear facilities. That would be like storing matches around your match factory. No, once you produce them, you got to get them away from there, because ask the people in Mexico. And by the way, that explosion in Mexico, I've been to that town. 1971, I took my class there. I took a class of students to that exact location, a little town that makes fireworks. And that's a story in itself. But safety, like I say, you don't store nuclear waste around a nuclear power dump, nuclear power plant. But the problem is the fuel itself needs cooling because they're using high octane, literally bomb-grade fuel. So one thing, too, I'm not sure if Trump understands this, but they've been decommissioning bombs to provide nuclear fuel for the nuclear power plants. He wants to increase our nuclear capability in the bomb region, and I'm not sure what his logic for that is. I don't really quite agree with that. But one of the problems with the U.S. nuclear fleet of missiles, anti-ballistic missiles, or intercontinental ballistic missiles, one of the problems is a lot of that equipment doesn't work. It's like 1960s vintage technology. And so if you're going to have a nuclear force, it would be nice to have it at least working so that your enemy's not laughing at you thinking, and you're thinking you have a deterrent when you don't. So at any rate, the issue of nuclear power, right now, all of the nuclear power plants in the United States are leaking. Trump has asked for an inventory of nuclear facilities in the United States. And I guarantee you, they're going to lie their butts off in those reports because they cannot put on the dotted line that they've been lying to the public all these years, that these plants are leaking. Some of them are in serious condition. They haven't tested the pipes that run underground. Probably for decades, they're being licensed without any inspection or certification of any kind at all. And when these power plants start to erupt, the cost of shutting them down, a good example, the San Onofre plant in San Diego. $5 billion to decommission this plant, and that's the opening ticket. I'm sure that's gone much higher than that since then. And so the slush fund that there was created by the Atomic Energy Commission to decommission nuclear power plants at the end of their life is not going to be anywhere near sufficient to shut down and decommission these nuclear power plants. And that's a big problem because these plants should be shut down before they have accidents. But even after they're shut down, the decommissioning process could take as much as 20 years. And then you have to take the nuclear waste, all the clothes that the people wore, the gloves, everything has a nuclear rating, and they have to be taken to someplace and disposed of. Absolutely incredible, huge problem. In a sense, I feel sorry for Trump, because this country has been so poorly managed for so long that this is just one, this is the tip of the iceberg of the problems that have to be solved for this country to survive, not to prosper even, just to survive. Okay, so now I'm going to turn this topic into a couple of directions. Remember the old expert systems? Oh man, this was 20 years ago easily, or knowledge-based systems, or the idea that Wikipedia would be a public venue encyclopedia that would have knowledge that would be put in there by you, the general public. Well, that didn't last long. Now it's totally controlled by the CIA. And so the narratives are completely that, say, a kid does a study for school. And you want to talk about, Costa Rica, or you'd want to talk about a country in Africa, or you want to talk about the mineral business, or the gem mining business, or whatever it is. What does the kid do today? Jumps onto Wikipedia, the supposed website that has answers to everything, and starts copying and pasting to build his report. The only trouble is, 99% of what appears in Wikipedia is pure garbage. It's absolutely, especially when it comes to technology, science, engineering, etc. There's some good information there, but you have to know where to draw the line. There's a lot of historical misinformation. Oh my goodness, when you look into history, etc. So going back to the idea of an expert system or a knowledge-based system, the idea was back in when the computers were developing and they were getting memories that storage, long-term memory storage that was large enough to take large volumes of data, they said, well, now we can have an expert system. You can take a topic like computer security, or you could take a topic like archaeology, and you could get all the experts in the world together, put all of their knowledge into this knowledge base, and then we would have knowledge. The only problem is knowledge changes sometimes on a daily basis. What you thought was true yesterday wasn't true. Something else very different is true. And so what would that do? That would take 1960s or 70s or 80s or 90s knowledge belief systems, many of which were patently wrong, and put it into a database where it could never be changed. And then dependencies and interdependencies etc., would form. And at that point, knowledge would be locked. Now, let me give another example of this. In the development of language, I forget which Spanish king had a lisp. And he didn't want any new words brought into the Spanish language. He thought it was complete. It didn't need any new words. And so he locked the Spanish language at that point in time, like in the 1500s. And then also required that all of the people talk like him. So that's where the lisp in Castilian Spanish comes from. It's not because that was naturally there. It was because the king demanded that everybody talk like him. And so that's the idea that behind knowledge base, etc., in that freezes the advancement. So there could be no more advancement. So forever you would be taught that comets are dirty snowballs, that the solar system formed all at one time 4.5 billion years ago, and that would be required knowledge. Now the government is trying to do this under Obamacare, and Hillary had talked about this, that there would be government agencies, truth agencies, and their job would be to sit down and decide what is true. And if you came out, if James McCanney came out and said comets are not dirty snowballs, they're the plasma discharge of the solar capacitor, I would be arrested because I was spitting out dogma contrary to the accepted dogma of the expert knowledge-based truth system that had been put in place by the government. Oh my goodness. This is the, you know, you see this a lot in education. It's called parsimonious, or it's called extensive potty training, where you want everything in order. This is the way it is. Don't give me any new information. I don't want to hear it. And on with life. Life for the next 1,000 years would be the same. It took 300 years for the Copernican sun-central solar system concept to be accepted by the Catholic Church. 300 years. Galileo was under home arrest for the rest of his life when he was older, died a blind man under house arrest because he had proposed the solar central and that the Earth was not the center of the universe. Wow. And this is what we were headed into. What we're going to have now is industry. The industries that succeed are not going to be worried about NASA's pet theories because, first of all, they don't work. And why would you invest time or money into something that's simply not true? And someday this will all come out and be common knowledge. But even by then, NASA will still be promoting it. There'll probably be two divisions, a Y in the road, where probably schools will continue teaching incorrect science for decades to come because they're locked in to the government. Let me add to my list the so-called respectable peer-reviewed journals. This is where scientists submit an article. It's a long, it's a lengthy process. I've been through this, and it's really not fun. And while you're waiting for your paper to be published in print, you know, it is like light years have gone by. But anyway, the idea that, once again, that scientists have developed this base of knowledge and that that must be correct, and that's the only thing you can add to it. I remember I was at an American Geophysical Union meeting, I believe it was about 1995, and I had my poster up, and all of a sudden I see across from me probably about 20 young guys, I'm sure graduate students or young inductees into Goddard Space Flight Center. But the head of Goddard group came over me, the plasma group, and all of these people are standing there, and he's the only guy that comes up to talk to me. And he says under his voice to me, he says, you know, you're really pissing off a lot of people. This is what the guy says to me. I'm at the American Geophysical Union meeting, 15,000 scientists there. I have my poster session up and I have my computer up. This is what the guy says to me. And I'm like, I knew who he was. And I knew his gig. In fact, he's the same guy that his student stole the X-rays and comet idea from me, took credit for it, took credit for the oceans on Mars. Michael Muma is his name. And Carrie Liss, his illustrious student. Yeah. That new ideas are difficult to come by. Anyway, he comes up to me. This is back in the Hale-Bopp days. Comes up to me and he says that to me. And everybody's looking at me. And I basically told him I don't give a rip what he thinks. And he said, you shouldn't be publishing what you're publishing. And I said, oh, I'm supposed to read the respectable journals, add a little bit in the same direction that they're going, and that's scientific research and publication. He goes, yes, that's the way it works. You're not supposed to come in and change anything. Well, sorry, dude. And so now you can see why I work as an independent. Always have, always will. But, okay, on to some other topics here. And this has to do with technocracy. Now, what do you do as a person trying to live in the world where technocracy is going to rule? And, I mean, you look at big corporations. This is one of the topics that led me into this. Got an email from a friend, listener, that Bridgewater is a major hedge company. It's the largest hedge company in the world. In other words, they invest in properties, consolidated loans, various other investments. And its owner and leader wanted to build an expert system basically to run the entire corporation per his vision. Okay. And so anyway, they're spending something like $160 million to build this corporate entity, computer software that will run the business, including personal assessments and evaluations for promotions or firing or whatever else you have. And so can you imagine working and going into your interview and everything you have done has to be logged into a computer system, and your evaluation will be based on your performance by a computer? Remind me not to go there to find a job. Oh, my goodness. You know, and who else would they lock into? Would they go into your Facebook page? Would they go into your, hack into your personal, email lists or whatever to try and judge you to see if you should get a promotion or not? This is some joker's idea of the future. A company, the largest hedge fund in the world, operating per his directive even after he's dead. Buddy, let it go. After you're dead, maybe the world's going to be different. So trying to run the world hedge funds, maybe there won't even be hedge funds. Maybe the world of investment will change. From speculative real estate to technology in space exploration. I don't know. What is this guy thinking? Anyway, that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about technocracy, because this is the kind of thing that's coming. How about the search for dark matter? Another technocracy boondoggle that everybody is running around in the astronomy, astrophysics world looking for dark matter. Supposedly this matter that has no properties like regular matter. Other types of matter can move right through it without having any type of effect, yet it has gravitational field associated with it enough to cause the distortion of galaxies. Well, I've said before that their entire model of the galaxy is wrong. And that's the problem, this idea that a galaxy just spins like a record disc with density waves is completely false. Yet you find people out there saying, well, gravity's got to be changed, or gravity works different, or something, when there's no scientific basis for saying that at all. Okay, so once again, if this were submitted into an expert knowledge system base, then forever and ever, science would have to be looking for dark matter. no small wonder that they've never found any, because, hey, buddy, it don't exist. You know, their theories are wrong and their conclusions are wrong. And so they're to patch it up, they have to create dark matter. And this is something that when I was at Cornell in 1979, I confronted Saltpeter. What was his first name? Edwin was his name. I saw him in the hall one day and I talked to him and I asked him what he thought of my recently published paper on galaxies, Continuing Galactic Evolution was the name of that paper, published in the peer-reviewed journals. And he looked at me, he was very angry. And so anyway, I said, this eliminates the need for the search for dark matter. And he turned on his heels and he quipped at me and he said, I don't accept the need for a new theory of how galaxies form. Didn't want to hear anything about it because they wanted to continue on their search for dark matter. This is 1979, where 40 years later, and they're still looking for this dark matter that nobody can tell you what the properties are, nor what it should look like when they discover it, but they're still out there looking. But back to my question, what do you do or what do your kids do that are going to college or they're in grade school now and you're heading into this future that has technocracy aiming at controlling you? Well, very simply, and it's my belief that we can live in a technologically advanced world with technology and live in a sustainable environment. And mind you, technocracy says, as part of its byline, it's for your benefit. It's for sustainability. They use all the buzzwords that you would like to use in your life. They use these words, making it sound so green and so positive and so helpful that living under these scientific rules will be a wonderful thing for you and your kids, and it's really not true. So how do you live in a technologically advancing world? Well, you have to be independent. You have to live, what my belief is, you have to live in a rural setting where you have your own water, your clean food. And remember that technocracy includes agriculture. The technocracy, the engineering of food. According to technocracy, Monsanto is your friend. I don't think so. Where, you know, that it's like immunization. The belief that immunizations will fight viruses has never been true. The whole polio scare is coming out now was due to chemicals that they were spraying on food at the time, and kids were being poisoned. So little kids are eating this highly toxic food, having body dysfunction, and they called it polio, and then supposedly the sock vaccine comes in. Everybody takes it, nobody gets polio, but what they did is they took these harsh chemicals that were being put in food, took them off the market, and there was a remarkable correlation between the time the sock vaccine came in, the so-called cure of polio, and the removal of toxins from the food at the same time. So technocracy is not your friend. Having a clean environment where you have just food, just regular heirloom seeds, clean water, you know, milk, unpasteurized because you need the enzymes. Pasteurization kills all the enzymes that are beneficial. And so anyway, what do? You simply live your ecologically sound lifestyle and live with technology to the degree that is helpful to you. Have an internet business. If you have a brick and mortar business, then expand it to an internet business. But remember, in the future world, a brick and mortar business, if it's successful and you're making money, fine. But there are all kinds of examples where people simply go to the internet because now the world is your marketplace. So I just helped a kid over the Christmas vacation. Kid came to me and said, what do I do with my life? I'm really confused, no good job opportunities. was thinking about going to college 5 years, and then I said, what are you going to get when you get out of college after 5 years? What kind of a job are you going to get, and how much money do you think you'll make? He said, well, I don't know. A lot of people don't get jobs, and it's questionable how much you would actually make if you did get a job. I said, well, what do you want to do that for? Plus waste 5 years. I said, get yourself an internet business. So I bounced some ideas off of this guy, and I said, you know, what do you want to do? What is your interest? And so we actually came up with a business plan for this guy to start an internet business, and very inexpensively using a Facebook page as a marketing tool, and then the Facebook page as a way of beginning a business, an internet business, and then growing with a growth plan, etc. And I said, this is a 10-year program. Don't expect year number one to be highly successful. But as you grow, then, start introducing other products. And anyway, so that's the short story. But that's what kids should be doing today. Going to college to get an education, to get a job, how many years are you going to have to work to make up those 5 years when you have no income? Not only do you have no income, you have a tremendous debt burden building at the same time. Then when you start making enough money to where you can afford college, to go to college and get a degree, which is a good thing, then go to college. But you're going to be a lot smarter. You're going to be a lot smarter than all the other kids that are there for advanced babysitting jobs, you know, or advanced, what I call a lot of college advanced babysitting. But the Trump era is going to mean ownership of your house and land. And in a lot of ways, he's a lot more of a libertarian than libertarians. Lower taxes, smaller government, government out of science, and science out of government. When private industry funds science, then it has to be real. So there's a lot of what I call the ding-dongs are running around the internet, some of them trying to copy my work, that will simply go by the wayside, because what they're producing is not real. It has no scientific validity. And so when you're just making YouTube videos and trying to promote garbage, that's one thing. Okay, fine. But when you have to start meeting with companies and showing how your materials work to people that are trying to make a profit and investing, that separates the men from the boys right there. So if you're spouting garbage, it's going to end up in the garbage pile. And as the years go by, those people will simply be left in the dust because they don't have anything. They never did have anything. So a lot of good, positive things are coming out of this. Whereas in the old world, they could get money slipped to them under the table by the CIA to be disinformation hubs, and life was grand. Lots of spending money. So anyway, that's one of the good issues that Trump is dumping. And when he talks about clearing the swamp in Washington, the CIA and the intelligence community is one of those. Greatly, greatly needed. Just a couple of quick topics here as I move towards the end of this show. Antarctica, once again, in the news. The exploration in that Antarctica is ongoing. I've given my opinion. They have discovered, they've hit probably human developments down there and archaeological sites and animals. And so they're digging that up. And of course, all of it is being kept highly secret. Since when are they going to let you in on that? Not at all. Just a quick note on St. Elmo's fire. And I was watching the destruction of the Hindenburg. I was just watching that to, you know, as you surf the internet, I was watching a video of that. And one of the potential causes of the fire was that one of the internal ballast balloons filled with hydrogen, which is highly flammable, was leaking. And around the time, it was a cloudy day, and you could see right above the back of the ship, you could see a glowing, that occurred right as it dropped the lines down to Earth. So what did dropping those lines do? Because it kept dropping ballast. It couldn't get down because I think the humidity in the atmosphere was buoying it up more and more. So it was having a lot of problems getting down to the ground. So finally, from a pretty high altitude, it drops the anchor lines down and boom, that's when it went. So what did dropping those lines down to the surface of the Earth do? It basically created a short circuit in the atmosphere, which was electrically charged. You could see the St. Elmo's fire building up on the back end, and the next spark was enough to set the whole thing off, and the rest is history. So at any rate, that was my estimation of what happened to the Hindenburg. The key to the understanding is that they dropped the lines, basically a tether. That's what NASA did by putting tethers out in outer space, that they just about blew up the space shuttle. Remember that little incident, which I told them not to do, but they did it anyway. Anyway, just a little aside note there. China says it's going to be to Mars by the year 2020. That's 3 years away, boys and girls. China is going to have a lunar landing mission in 2018. They're talking about putting astronauts up there, but clearly none of these people understand the issues of radiation in space. I guess they're going to have to find out the hard way. Just a comment on technocracy. There's quite a few this week, two more. Oil companies, these are the companies that do the drilling, do the tough work on oil exploration and extraction, went out of business. And that's because the oil industry is failing because of the glut of oil on the world market, also keyed off by Russia leaving the petrol dollar. And the other companies like Saudi Arabia putting out tremendous production of oil to try and drive them out of business. But Russia gleaning all the way as it takes its Russian investment and buys world gold at a very low reduced price. On the election, some people are still saying that Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. Do this little calculation. They say she won by 3 million votes. She only won 37 counties. So imagine that Donald Trump only won by one vote in all of the other 3,000 counties that he won, which is not true. But that would mean she had to make up 3 million votes out of 37 counties. That's 81,000 per county. Doesn't work because a lot of those counties or precincts only have a couple thousand voters. One last comment, that technocracy is fear-based. They use fear to drive their agenda. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. Remember the homepage with my water filters, jmccsci.com. We're at the crossroads. Good night.